Hello and welcome to the Pax Mundi show, where I'll be trying to shed some light on the Dark Age, the War of Terror, and to try and deconstruct some of the myths and misinformation about the Global War of Terror. First, I'll start with some of the news from the dark side. Last week, I was talking in the show about the 10th anniversary of the start of the Iraq invasion and some of the Panorama program, which exposed most of the lies that were told about that. Also last week was another groundbreaking documentary TV program, this time produced by NBC News in the United States, the film Hubris, Selling the Iraq War, was a documentary based on the book Hubris, Selling the Iraq War, by Michael Isikoff and David Korn. Now, the program again exposed the lies, the deceptions, the way that all of the feelings and anger that the American public had after 9/11 were vented into this invasion of Iraq, how the intelligence was made up and sold that there was this Iraqi connection with Al-Qaeda. It was shown how the only evidence that was ever available on that, the evidence, principal evidence that was used, was actually the tortured confessions of this alleged terrorist, Al-Libi. He was tortured by the Egyptians and came up with this implausible story that there was a link between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. This was used, like all the other false evidence, to sell the Iraq war to the UN and to the American public. So check that one out. It is available to download from reputable torrent sites. That's Hubris, Selling the Iraq War. One amazing fact I came across this week, it was actually released in February, as I understand. I'd heard these tales about black helicopters, you know. Now, I'm a bit of a skeptic, you know, so I thought, oh, well, you know, I'll hold my view on this, really. You know, these nano helicopters that were allegedly all over the place. Well, it would appear that it is actually now confirmed in a report in February. It was actually released that the British Army is using these nano helicopters, surveillance helicopters. These small helicopters are 4 inches by 1 inch wide. They weigh about 16 grams. That's half an ounce to those of you who use imperial weight. And they are monitored from a customized laptop. They're currently marketing at about a quarter of a million for a set, which is two helicopters and the modified laptop. And the British Army has been using these for some while, apparently in Afghanistan and other places that they don't mention. And they can stay in the air apparently for about an hour. They run off batteries, and they have been using them in the battlefield. It really is amazing, to me anyway, the sci-fi world of, robot warfare of Philip K. Dick and Ian McNabb is coming closer to us every day. So the British Army has just ordered another £31 million worth of these devices. And while in Britain we're here suffering austerity and cuts to public services, cuts to benefits, etc., there seems to be more money than ever available for arms. We are just buying a new fleet of the Polaris submarine, nuclear submarines, at a cool $56 billion, and on top of that, investing in drone technology, new warships, and also new fighter aircraft. So there's certainly no shortage of money for war. Over in Syria, there's been a lot happening there, a lot of very crucial developments. As we hear one thing, then another, the situation worsens, and the possibilities of a negotiated settlement, anything, short of a war of attrition, seems to be reduced. As you may recall, last week I reported how the Syrian National Council, the Syrian National Coalition, which is a coalition of the Syrian opposition groups, has elected the U.S. educated former businessman Gassanhito as a provisional prime minister for the government in waiting, the opposition government of the National Council. It is notable that Hito is actually a U.S. citizen. He has not been in Syria for over 20 years. And clearly there was some disunity over his election, within the Syrian Council, with only 35 out of 65 delegates voting, and only about 30 voting for Hito. But suddenly, following this decision, the Arab League, which is a group made up of all the Arab nations, has chosen to give the seat at its recent summit to the opposition, rather than they'd suspended the government last year and taken their seat away from them. This time they actually gave the seats to the opposition, and Hito did attend, Ghassan Hito attended that as one of the delegates. Now, this is very significant. It's a big move from which it will be hard to move back to, and it appears to undermine all of the existing attempts and missions for mediation, because the Arab League and the UN had actually chosen a joint mediator, that is Lakhdar Brahimi, and he was on a joint Arab League and UN mandate to find a peaceful settlement. Now, clearly, if the Arab League has thrown its lot in with this Syrian National Council, with the opposition, and are effectively recognizing them as the de facto government of Syria, then they cannot also be seriously trying to find a peaceful settlement, and it does really question all of those negotiations, and it questions the integrity, you know, of all of the players within the Arab League. The foreign minister of Russia has picked up on this, saying that, you know, they deeply regret the move by the Arab League to recognize the Syrian National Council and to give them the seat at the summit, and conclude also that it is a rejection of the international peace plan that was jointly agreed by all parties in Geneva in June last year. Now, lots of other moves and news in Syria. There's been a lot more violence, certainly around the capital, Damascus, where there is battles going on in the city, and, you know, in the central areas of the city. 15 students were killed when mortar shells hit the Damascus University canteen. And just this week, the UN has actually reduced their staff in the city, particularly the foreign staff of the UN have been withdrawn. Many of them have been withdrawn from Damascus because of the intensity of the fighting. The UN had about 100 foreign officers, UN officials, and on top of that, about 800 Syrian staff. So this is clearly getting serious, where, you know, the UN, who, you know, are actually, you know, charged with trying to monitor, you know, the peace in fighting zones are actually withdrawing because of the intensity of the fighting. There's also been a crisis in the Syrian refugee camps in Turkey. After a fire in the Akakali tent city in Turkey, where conditions are deteriorating, and there are clearly lots of issues because of the size of these camps and the difficulty in providing facilities. there were protests following the fire, and the Turkish security fired tear gas and water cannons on the demonstrators. It's subsequently been claimed that some of the Syrian refugees were arrested and deported back to Syria. That is denied by Turkey, who say that 56 Syrian individuals returned voluntarily. So they returned voluntarily back to a war zone. Highly unlikely. Even the UN Commission for Refugees stated that they were very concerned with reports of an incident and with the allegations about a possible deportation back to Syria. Now, here in the UK, there's been a lot happening in Parliament, where the latest justice bill, which is rolling out the use of secret evidence to all civil and criminal courts, has just gone through the final round of readings and votes. It originated in the House of Lords, and it's now ended up going through the Commons and then back to the Lords. It has not been amended, well, except regressively. There was one or two regressive amendments that actually make the bill worse. There was in the initial paper an obligation on the Home Secretary to actually provide a regular report of all cases of the use of secret evidence back to Parliament. This has now been removed by one of the amendments, and it is now at the discretion of the Home Secretary if they decide that it is not in national interest to report back on a particular case, then they won't do that. So really, what this is a critical case law that is coming in, where rights that we've had, you know, since the Magna Carta, are being undermined, and we know that they will be removed, and they will be removed forever. And worryingly, there seems to be so little public awareness of what's going on. Even within Parliament, the opposition parties, with the exception of the small parties, the Green Party, Plaid Cymru, and the Scottish Nationalists, have completely ignored this act, this draconian legislation that is going through our Parliament. This really does, you know, expose the consensus that we have in British politics, and worryingly also the kind of apathy that we have in our British society about the loss of our civil liberties, about the actions, you know, that we are being a party to, about the reduction of all of our rights in the name of the war on terror and in the name of national security. We have in this country, one of the things we have is this nostalgia about the Second World War and the complacency acceptance by the British public of whatever was thrown at them. And there is a current craze for the use of this wartime propaganda. You may have seen these posters and things which say, keep calm. You know, this is keep calm and carry on. Keep calm and whatever. Just do nothing. This sums up the general attitude listeners accepted, but there certainly is a complacency about what is happening, you know, to our laws, to our rights, you know, to our country by those who are in power. And generally, people don't seem to realise what they got until it's gone, and even what they've agreed to. So when the law changes to our laws and the treaties that we're signing, that our government is signing in our name, when all of these come into effect, we're unaware until it affects us or someone that we can identify with. So one example is the one-sided extradition treaty that the UK has with the United States, whereby British citizens, or indeed, you know, anyone who is actually resident in the UK, will be extradited to the United States without the full evidence of the case which they're wanted for, which the US is asking for them to be extradited for, without presenting the facts of the case, and therefore there is no hearing of the evidence on British soil. Now this is completely different to the procedures that we have with extradition requests to all other countries, where, you know, there will be a judicial, you know, assessment of the evidence. And generally, this has been, you know, accepted any great concern by the British public. You'll be aware of a number of cases of hackers who've been extradited to the United States, of alleged hackers, of, you know, other people extradited for business fraud, and lots of Muslims. It was under this treaty that Abu Hamza and a number of others, Taher Hassan and Baba Ahmed, were extradited to the US recently. And I just noted in my local paper this week, the Tameside Advertiser, there was an article about this local person who was facing extradition to the United States for a business, alleged business fraud. Now, there was absolute outrage, you know, by all the people who were supporting him. This person was a current serving member of the British military who'd actually been involved in a bit of a private enterprise during the Iraq War. He'd come out of the military and set up as a, you know, security consultant, a mercenary, providing security to different clients in Iraq. And the case was that they'd been working for this group and they'd overcharged them and generally breached their contract with this group. So there was a particular outrage because this person was a member of the forces, and it was felt that really the minister should be hearing this case, calling it in, and the MP was demanding that it be treated as a special case. And I think this is really typical that where people don't realise how the law has changed, how our rights have been diminished until it affects them or people that, you know, they can relate to, even the MP. And these were the people who were actually responsible for agreeing these treaties, which were actually negotiated under Tony Blair's Labour government. So moving on further about the complacency in British society and public opinion, I was most concerned to see this week, it was reported actually in the Huffington Post that the drone strikes, you may recall that I've spoken at length about, you know, the drone strikes which are going on in various places in the world, in northwest Pakistan, in Yemen, Somalia, etc., where there are massive civilian casualties. And an opinion poll was carried out with members of the public in a joint study from the University of Surrey's Centre for International Intervention and a defence think tank, the Royal United Services Institute, in collaboration with YouGov. And members of the public were shown this report. It was recently reported that the UK government might be passing information to US authorities to help them carry out missile strikes from unmanned aircraft called drones to kill known terrorists overseas in countries like Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia. And let's say, worryingly, the study found that 55% of the people who responded to the opinion poll would support the UK government helping in a drone strike to kill a known terrorist overseas. And indeed, that support rose to over 67% if it could be guaranteed that no innocent civilians would be killed. Now, support did drop quite a lot if the risk to civilians got higher. And that was falling to just 43% if two or three innocent people might be killed, with opposition from 41%. If it was likely that 10 to 15 innocent civilians might be killed, then the support dropped to 32%, with opposition rising to 46%. Now, I think this is really indicative of the cold attitude that we have to casualties, civilian casualties, particularly when they're happening in other countries. It is perhaps something to do with that British philosophy of utilitarianism. The idea that it is worth sacrificing a few people or doing some bad if it's for the greater good. So what I'd like to do really tonight is to look at, you know, what is going on, you know, in Britain. What's the root of this complacency to the activities of our government intervening in other countries, support for illegal assassinations through drones in other countries, acceptance of uses of torture, etc. And the other one is, well, you know, how do we move on with this? There is clearly, you know, there is some dialogue. We've got it here on Dark City Radio, where, you know, we in Dark City Radio is talking about all these things that are happening that you don't hear elsewhere, but generally on the mainstream media, it's very, very quiet. I'm hoping that some of you might like to call in. If you are listening now and want to take the number down to call, the details are as follows. So it's 00441612980298. I'll just read that out again. That's, please call 00441612980. 0298. You can also Skype at Bob's Backyard, and the lines are open now. Do we have any callers? Well, while you're thinking, I'd just like to draw your attention to some events which are due to take place in Manchester in a few weeks. We've got a couple of events around Guantanamo, the issue of Guantanamo, and all of these people who are being kept prisoner in Guantanamo and in other parts of the world, as a part of the War of Terror. These events have been organised by a group of people called Caged Prisoners, and they principally organise around trying to help directly, when possible, and raise awareness of the what's happening to all these various people who are being targeted around the world, in the UK, in the US, in Guantanamo, and their relatives and their families and the communities that they come from, that are being attacked by this global war of terror. So the Guantanamo event will be held in Manchester, and the first one is on Wednesday the 17th of April. Now, this will be a flash mob in Piccadilly Gardens at 12 noon, and that will be followed by a workshop at the University of Manchester. So the next event is the following day, on Thursday, 18th April, at 4 o'clock at Manchester Metropolitan Business School. The event is titled Absent Justice, and there will be a number of speakers on different aspects of the state terrorism in the UK. So we will first have Nasir Khaled. He'll be speaking on EU anti-terror laws and Islamophobia. And we will then have former Guantanamo detainee Omar Degais, who will be talking about his experiences in Guantanamo, and also, I'm sure, telling us about what is happening to the people who are in Guantanamo now, the remaining prisoners. You may recall I spoke last week about Guantanamo, about the hunger strikes which are going on there. There's over 100 of the remaining 166 prisoners in Guantanamo who are currently on a hunger strike protest against their situation. As you will recall, I was mentioning that most of these people, over 50% of them, have now been cleared for release, but they are held in detention, ongoing indefinite detention, because there's nowhere to send them to, or the countries that they come from will not accept them. So things are definitely deteriorating at Guantanamo, and you know, I look forward to hearing more about that. Other speakers will include Jahangir Mohammed, who will be talking about Shaka Amer and Afia Siddiqui, asking where are they now? Now, for those of you who don't know, Shaka Amer is the last remaining British resident who is still in custody in Guantanamo. He has been cleared for release for several years, actually, and it's very unclear why he's still being held, why the US is not releasing him. Indeed, it's his case has even been discussed in the UK Parliament, and requests have been made for his release. Now, the other case is Afia Siddiqui, who you may recall me talking about before. Afia is a Pakistani woman who was kidnapped in Pakistan, then along with her children, along with her three children, and then miraculously and strangely reappeared 5 years later in Afghanistan with all sorts of incriminating evidence with her, and was later taken into custody by US forces, charged with trying to kill US personnel, and has now been sentenced to several life sentences, I think over 86 years in total. So that's what's coming up. That's in Manchester. Don't miss those events if you are in the area, if you're able to get there. Also, check out the Cage Prisoners website for more information about what's happening to these people and to us, because this is the thing that I'm trying to get across, really. It is that all of these rights that we're giving up in the name of the of security, because of our fear, then, you know, we will also, you know, be on the receiving end of this. This isn't just about the Muslims. It's about, you know, the rest of us. You know, that as the pastor's poem said, when about the Nazi regime, that when they came for the communists, I wasn't there. When they came for the Jews, I wasn't there. I believe we have a call out there. Is that...
Hello, Nigel.
Oh, hiya.
Hi, it's Kelly again. Me again. I was just wondering, I read during the week a report that Jordan had closed its border with Syria. I wondered if you knew anything about that, because it wasn't a very detailed report. Just that, yeah, Jordan had closed its border with Syria, and these so-called Syrian rebels have been getting trained in Jordan. So I wondered if you could maybe add something to that.
Yeah, well, that certainly things are hotting up in Jordan. As you know, the British government is involved there. We've actually got British Special Forces training the Syrian rebels in Jordan. And that's also why I think Jordan has been paid something like $200 million by the US for their services. So there was recently a state visit by Obama to Jordan, you may recall, about a week ago or so, just a bit more. When he visited Israel, he also made a stop in Jordan and had a meeting with the King Abdullah there. And definitely there is something happening in Jordan. Clearly Jordan is the next front from which the rebels will be attacking Syria. Previously, I think their main supply lines have been from Turkey in the north, but now I think you're going to see movement of these rebel forces from Jordan, and also that's probably where they'll be being equipped now by the weaponry that it has now been revealed that the CIA is actually providing them. So you can be pretty sure that this weaponry will, I think, be going through Jordan, and you know, we're going to see the war escalating there.
Sorry, just had to unmute to say thank you. Yeah, that makes things a little bit clearer. It's certainly worth a bit more research as to what's happening there, I reckon.
Yeah, I think certainly the British government is very central to this. You know, you look at all the organisations. I was just, you know, going through some of them last week that part of the Syrian opposition, and they've all been based in Britain for a long time. The Syrian human rights organisation that is, you know, reporting on behalf of the rebels is based in London. Much like Libya, you know, where Britain has been where the attack has been planned, I think. And it's not looking good, really, from any perspective. Another thing that has happened this week, you may have heard that the US has actually threatened the Iraqi government. There's been a number of challenges and threats made to Iraq over allowing their airspace to be used by Iran. So, despite the fact that there is these embargoes on the you know, arms going to the rebels and exports, etc., we are arming the rebels, but Iraq is being threatened for allowing Iran to fly over their airspace, and the allegations are that weapons are being flown in, and that this should be stopped, and that this is also a threat to other Gulf nations who, you know, are being supported by the US. So there's a lot of things going on. Clearly, you know, the war is escalating. There's so many different things going on there. I told you about some of the events, killings, etc. We've had bombings of one of the military commanders in his own hometown, in his own car. He was blown up. He's one of the rebel Syrian Free Army commanders. So there's things going on there, and these are in areas which they have controlled, the rebels have controlled for some while, and it's being done with their people and their in their space. So I think there is a lot of infighting within the Syrian opposition. There's obviously a scrabble maybe for the leadership and posturing. Well, we just need to try and keep an eye on it, and we've got to try and, I think, keep a grip on this, that and not be kind of overwhelmed by the call for humanitarian intervention on behalf of these civilians and you know, refugees, because the very people who are asking for this intervention are also the people who are cynically causing, you know, the civilian deaths and these incidents of alleged chemical weapon use, which is supposedly being investigated by the UN. I mean, how are they going to do that if they're actually withdrawing personnel? It is a bit unclear. I think the fact that the UN is withdrawing personnel is indicative that they know that there's going to be some kind of escalation and increased foreign intervention. Do we have any more callers out there?
Nigel, hi, it's Prajna.
Hi,
I've just been looking at globalresearch.ca, and there's some quite interesting articles on there, a couple of articles particularly about China. One pointing out that America are boosting their military presence in Africa, and because China's got a huge involvement in Africa, that's designed to put pressure on them. Another article there, Partnership for War, NATO military training and war games in Kazakhstan, which is right on the border of both Russia and China. So again, that's putting pressure on things. And scanning down a little bit further, there's an article noting that America is spending 50% of its money at the moment on the military.
Yeah. Global research. There's a lot of good stuff coming out of that website. I know I've listened to some of the reports from I think Michael Chuzadovsky.
Exactly, the man. That was another article I noticed that looked really interesting. There's an article that he wrote called Dangerous Crossroads,
yeah.
The Threat of a Preemptive Nuclear War Directed Against Iran.
Yeah.
And this is something that's been concerning me really for a long time, because the neoconservatives changed the policy, and suddenly they had this ambition to make nuclear war possible, really, because it hasn't been possible. It's been the end of the earth, any suggestion of nuclear war. And now they're saying, well, we've got these bunker buster bombs and so on, and they're only a little atomic explosion, and it's just a way of escalating it, as far as I can see.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, hats off to Global Research and Michael Chuzadovsky and other contributors there. Really, they are, you know, talking about the global manipulation, like you said, the power games that are going on. Thanks for tuning in. We're running out of time now, and I look forward to discussing some of these things further. I'd certainly like to talk about the Global Research website, and don't forget to check out the Cage Prisoners, cageprisoners.org. Thank you.